We are picking up our second lesson in the 21st chapter of John. This is actually the last five verses of the book. This is following that passage we used at the start of the summer about Peter and the disciples on the beach and the resurrection and Jesus asking Peter three times, "Do you love me?" This immediately follows that story. Peter turned around and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. This was the one who had leaned against Jesus at the meal and asked him, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw this disciple, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus replied, "If I want him to remain until I come, what difference does that make to you? You must follow me." Therefore, the word spread among the brothers and sisters that this disciple wouldn't die. However, Jesus didn't say he wouldn't die, but only if I want him to remain until I come. What difference does that make to you? This is the disciple who testifies concerning these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true. Jesus did many other things as well. If all of them were recorded, I imagine the world itself wouldn't have enough room for the scrolls that would be written. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I think, Gayla, that that minute for mission is actually 13 or 14 years old. Because I came at the end of January 2010. So it's been a day or two. And that kind of fits really well with this set of passages. John's gospel starts with "in the beginning." In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and all things were created through the Word. And then Jesus uses that beginning word several times in this passage. That's originally kind of what grabbed my attention in trying to draw this study of John to a close so that we could start something new next week. But also that there's a fundamental piece of our faith and of our lives that kind of happens and we struggle with it. We all want new beginnings. For some, we want a new beginning to wipe away what's been in the past. For some, a new beginning is just the next step and the next stage. For some, a new beginning is a little bit terrifying. All of those beginnings come with endings, though. And one of the pieces of that is that our faith tells us we're not supposed to be afraid of the end, not afraid of death, because there is life and new life and resurrection. And so beginnings and endings are just inherently tied up together in our faith and frankly, in our lived experience. You stop one job, most of us have to start another one. You stop working and retire, you have to find something to fill your time, unless you're Dan and Susie, who just retire so perfectly and never go back to work at all. You know, all of these things happen to us over and over again. And so when we deal with John's gospel today, just be thinking about the big picture and the little picture. Jesus is here in this text really powerfully gracious and charitable towards the disciples. Jesus starts off by saying, "You are not servants anymore. You are now friends." And the passage, that part of this passage that we normally hold on to is where greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. And then we kind of get stuck there. Because that's Jesus. And then we just kind of get stuck there. But there is this power that Jesus is saying, we're not boss and servant, master and slave, Lord and worshiper. We are friends. And that's because I've told you what I'm about in the world. You know what I'm doing in the world. There's a conditional in there that we talked about at length in Sunday school. We always read it, the way it's translated in English is, if you do what I command, then you're my friend. Which we kind of take to mean, do it or else. Or if you don't do it, you're not one of Jesus' friends. I think there's a third way to read it that is probably more faithful. And that is Jesus saying that one of the ways you show you are with me is you do what I have asked you to do. Every time I do a confirmation class, we have this discussion. It's about values. It's about shared things. And I ask them, how many of them have a pet? Almost all of our kids, our youth have a pet. And I ask them, how many of them have a friend who has ever kicked their pet? And there are no friends who have ever kicked their pets. Jesus is saying, if you're along with me, show me you're along with me. And that is how we will be friends. Jesus is then, it is mind-blowing on a certain level to have the divine walk in and say, by the way, we're friends now. I mean, fundamentally, theologically earth-shaking statement. Not, you know, as Gary Larson does in The Far Side, the white dude with the big white robe and the white hair sitting on the throne up high. I had a t-shirt once that had God at his computer. You know why I had one with God at his computer, right? And shows this guy walking down the street and there's a piano hanging down over his head and Jesus, God's finger is poised over the smite key. My keyboards do not have smite keys. A God who is our friend is a very, very different contrast to that. And I think a huge challenge to us. We talked a lot about relationships in Sunday school this morning, and that many of us have friends that, like, we don't need to talk to for years, but boom, we're right back where we were as soon as we get with them. We have other friends who've been with us through thick and thin, and we have people we thought were friends who are not. And that friendship is a great sign of intimacy, but it probably also speaks to some of the reason why people leave the church. When we say we're friends with Jesus, when a friend breaks our heart, how likely are we to restart that, to be willing to risk that again? There is a deep, deep, powerful intimacy in Jesus saying we are friends, but it runs a huge risk. It runs a huge risk. And so there's this other piece here. Jesus says repeatedly, we've got the word friends, and then we have this word love. And Jesus says over and over again that these commandments that he is giving us are so that we can love one another. Love one another as Christ loves us. And just in general, I'm telling you these things so that you will love each other. That too has been a challenge in the life of the church. Often we have used those commandments as weapons. This is how you do it, and if you don't do it this way, you're out. We've enforced our own version of orthodoxy that way. We've managed to run off good people, faithful people. I think we've also used commandments in fear. If you do this, if you live like this, if you've ever done this, then you will burn in hell for all eternity. I think it fundamentally changes how we view the commandments if they are for us, both given for us to carry out and given for our neighbor to carry out with regards to us in love. Not in terms of figuring out who's in and who's out or who gets the gold stars or more stars in their crown or preferred seating in heaven. I have yet to figure out how that's going to work. But so that we are better to and with one another here and now. I think there's a fundamental challenge there. Then Jesus is again, finally, way too gracious with the disciples. Then and now. says, "You have been with me from the beginning." Okay, folks, you remember some stories of the disciples? How with it were they in the Gospel of John? They don't even seem to be in the same book, do they? I mean, it is incredibly gracious for Jesus to say, "You've had a clue and you've been with me from the beginning." Because like if we start where John says in the beginning, at the very, very beginning, that's a long time. But that ties in with something else Jesus says here. "You didn't choose me. I chose you." And there is, again, a hugely powerful message in that. Hugely. I can tell you, I was often the last kid picked to play football on the playground. And it ain't fun. It ain't fun being the last one up there wondering, "Oh, we'll play shorthanded instead of having him." Now, we like the fact that if we think we get to choose Jesus, we're in charge. I think that's a little delusional, don't you? So Jesus says he picks us and calls us friends and loves us and challenges us to love one another as he loves us. I mean, there's an awful lot going on here. And it shakes the very tenet of what we typically want to do with religion. Gayla hit on it perfectly in the minute for mission. We want the checklist. Okay, got baptized, check. Got confirmed, check. Tithed for 2 years, check. Had my kids baptized, check. They all had church weddings, check. Okay, I'm good. And Jesus here is saying it's more about how you do than what you do. And there's a fundamental challenge to us because how you do is nowhere on the checklist. We don't say, "Raise your kids in the church without threatening to ground them if they don't go to church." We don't say those things. We have checklists. One of our challenges in this passage is to move beyond the checklist, to move beyond the rules and the commandments for the sake of the rules and the commandments, and look at them for the sake of love. We close with the last five verses of the book of John's Gospel, and we see again Peter being very, very painfully human. Peter has just had this whole long conversation with Jesus about, "Do you love me?" He's had Jesus' complete, total, and undivided attention. And now they're off walking together, and the disciple whom Jesus loved, whoever that is walking along behind. And that is enough to get Peter's dander up. "Well, what about them?" And Jesus' response really sounds a whole lot like what my mother told me and my brother when we were fighting and complaining and comparing each other's list of sins. "You have more than enough to handle all by yourself, Peter. Don't worry about nobody else." Jesus says, "If I want him, what is it to you? Follow me." In the NRSV version that we used for Sunday school, it then says, "And then there was rumors that this person wouldn't die among the brothers and sisters, even though that wasn't what Jesus said." I think we have this challenge today in the church that so often we are not content faithfully walking with Jesus. I mean, I think Peter is genuinely faithfully walking with Jesus at this point. And then he goes, "But he can't come too, can he?" And that is often the narrative in the church. And Jesus says, "What is it to you? Follow me." So I think we've got this challenge that is earth-shaking. We are not to have these commandments because they're rules for the sake of rules, but to love each other. we are to be friends in a deeply intimate, powerful, transcendent relationship with God. And we are to worry a little bit less about who else is on for the ride. Growing up in the South, there are a lot of jokes about different religious groups. There's one about the best way to do mission. There's one about what do you do with bats in the belfry. You know how you solve bats in the belfry of a church, right? You baptize them, you'll never see them again. The best way to do mission is that you have the Presbyterians plan it, the Baptists do it, and the Anglicans pay for it. That's the best way to do mission. There's a joke about a church tour bus that goes off the road, and sadly, everybody on it dies. And so St. Peter is taking a group of them around heaven all at once to try to find the right places for them. And they reach one door, and St. Peter turns and whispers to the group, shh. They tiptoe very carefully past the door. When we get down the hallway a little bit, one of the people says, okay, St. Peter, what was that about? And he goes, oh, that's the fundamentalists. They like to think they're all alone up here. How much should it really matter to us who else Jesus has made space for, made time for, made love for, made grace for? One of our big discussions this morning in Sunday school is that we really struggle because so much of our lives goes back to verse 14, if, and it's conditional. If you do what I want you to do, then we'll be friends. If you do what I want you to do, then I'll leave you in the will. If you do what I want you to do, then I'll pay for college. You know, all these things. And then on top of having a God who is our friend, we have a God who loves us unconditionally. And we just don't know what to do with that. Because everything else is conditional. Everything in our world is conditional except for God, for the love and grace of God. So here we are. We're about to start a new church school year and all these things. And I think the best thing we could do is end our belief that everything is transactional and conditional, that we could latch on deeply to God's unconditional love as laid out in front of us in Jesus Christ, who picks us, who chooses us, who generously says we've had a clue from the beginning and been with him, and calls us friends. But oh my, that would be a new thing, wouldn't it? And new things are sometimes terrifying. Can we do this in the beginning and see the world transform, not just in our lives, but around us, for love of neighbor, for love of God, for love that knows no bounds? To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.